Okay, so I guess we're starting. Hello. Good morning. Good to see you all. Thank you for coming. The plan for our half hour, 20 minutes, is just, and I know that the theme of today is Libi B'Mizrach, Vanochi B'Sof Ma'arav, and we are really Sof Ma'arav. I mean, when Rabbi Yehuda Levi said that, he thought, you know, he was in Spain. He thought that was the end of the earth. But we are the far, we are the west. We are the far, we're the end of the earth. I know that's the theme today. And so the plan was to talk a little bit about my experience as a chaplain and how we find hope in the hospital and to try to apply that to some of the things that we're experiencing in the world more broadly today. And so I wanted to share with you some ideas on finding hope in difficult times. And, you know, there's actually an old story that's very relevant. It's always relevant, but especially today. There was a news crew in Yerushalayim who wanted to get a sound bite about the situation. So they went around and they said they need just one word. So they went to people in Yerushalayim asking them just one question, and you can only give a one-word answer. The question was, how is the situation in Israel today? So they could only give one answer. So what did Israelis say? They said, good. It's good. So they said, okay, we can't put this on the news. This is, you didn't say anything. Fine. You could have two words. In two words, how is the situation in Israel today? And they said, not good. In two words, not good. But things are a little bit difficult today. I think it's a difficult time. And so how do we find hope in hard times? So I'll share with you a few stories and a few anecdotes and a few examples of things that we try. Number one is that, of course, it's always helpful when things are difficult to have someone professional to talk to. It's not embarrassing. It's actually really important because we know that there is a concept, the Gemara says, Ein chovesh matir atzmo mibeis ha'asurim. A prisoner can't free themselves from prison. Sometimes you need somebody to talk to, somebody who has a different perspective, somebody who's not you, can help you when to talk things out and to help you, either they can help you see things differently, or sometimes when you talk about things, you actually convince yourself that things are different than you expected, because just by talking, you it makes you realize things. It makes you see things and understand things about yourself just by having someone to talk to. But sometimes we don't have someone to talk to, or sometimes we don't feel like the people that we're talking to are helpful. So I'll tell you an amazing story that I heard from Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinreb. Rabbi Weinreb was the rabbi of Shomer Emunah in Baltimore. He was a very popular rabbi. He was the head of the OU for a while. And the story goes as follows. When he was a young rabbi, he was a psychiatrist. He was a rabbi of a synagogue, and he was teaching in schools. And he experienced burnout. After a little while, he realized it was too much for him. He didn't know, does he want to be a psychologist, a rabbi? He didn't know if he was really fit for all the things he was doing. And he felt that he needed help. So he didn't know who to talk to, though, because he's the rabbi. He didn't know who he could confide in. So he realized, maybe I need to talk to a rabbi who's a much greater rabbi than myself. And he had the idea to reach out to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So the story goes that he found someone who could get him a connection to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So he called the Rebbe's office. He's in Baltimore. And he knows you can't just show up at 770 and get a meeting with the Rebbe. He wanted to get an appointment. So he got a connection to the Rebbe's secretary, Rabbi Chodakov, right? So he calls the Rebbe's secretary, and he gets him on the phone, and he was embarrassed to say who he was, though. So when he said, who is this? He said, it's a Yid from Baltimore. That's who he introduced himself. I'm a Yid from Baltimore, and I'm experiencing burnout, and I don't know what I want to do with my life, and I'm having a hard time. I want to come meet with the Rebbe. I'll come whenever you tell me has time, I'll go. Just tell me when I could go. So he hears the secretary then, like, pull the phone to the side, and he understood Yiddish. He hears the secretary say to the Rebbe in Yiddish, there's a Yid from Baltimore who's experiencing burnout who wants to talk to you. So then he hears the Rebbe in the background say, he's in Baltimore? And he says, yeah, Baltimore. He says, tell him to talk to Rabbi Weinreb. So he can't believe that because he's Rabbi Weinreb. So he gets back on the phone. He says, talk to Weinreb. He says, okay, I'm sorry I didn't tell you before. I am Weinreb. So here's the secretary's quiet for a minute because he's also a little bit surprised. And he says, Reb, this is Weinreb on the phone. So he said, he responded, oh, in that case, tell me he needs to talk to himself. Which was a brilliant answer. Because when he heard that, he realized, wow. He said, okay. He hung up the phone and he said, the Reb is telling me I could figure it out myself. Like, this is a problem that I am capable of figuring out. Maybe there's some problems I have to go to the Rebbe for. This is a problem he's telling me. I have the koach within me. And he said, I never had the confidence in myself. And suddenly I realized that I need to have self-confidence because I could do it. I could figure it out. And he said it changed his life. He said the Rebbe changed his life without actually meeting him, but just by telling him, sometimes you need to ask yourself. So sometimes we have to turn to ourselves. Usually, we have to. I think it's important to ask someone else, to ask someone greater than ourselves. I do all the time. I usually realize that things are too hard for me and I have to ask somebody else. But sometimes, either we don't have someone to reach out to or it's not helping, we have to turn within ourselves and find hope. So how do we find hope in very difficult times? And what do we say in the hospital? So I'll tell you a few strategies that we do. Number one is that we distinguish between hope and expectation. Sometimes we expect things to happen, and that could be very damaging because we have expectation of what we want to have happen, and it doesn't happen the way we hoped it would happen, and we become depressed and disappointed. But the truth is, hope is never bad to have hope. It's just we have to be careful about expecting things to happen and hoping they'll happen. I'll tell you an example between hope and expectation. I remember talking to a patient a while back who needed a bone marrow transplant. And they were hoping that they would get a bone marrow transplant. And they didn't get the bone marrow transplant, and they felt very dejected. But they told me that they were praying. Their prayer constantly was, "We want to receive a bone marrow transplant, or we want to have a miracle in bone marrow transplantation." So, what does that mean? What's a miracle in bone marrow transplantation? So that I forgot about this story, and that person just reached out to me because of something that I posted on Facebook, which I forgot. I didn't realize. So the reason they needed a bone marrow transplant, this person, was because they were suffering from sickle cell anemia. Sickle cell anemia is a somewhat rare but a very bad disease, and one of the ways to cure it would be through a bone marrow transplant, but the truth is that doesn't even really cure it necessarily. But this month, just this month, there was a new breakthrough that was a radical change in medicine forever, which was, anyone know what I'm talking about? For the first time ever, CRISPR gene editing was approved by the FDA. This means that a person could now get a bone marrow transplant from themselves. They could donate bone marrow to themselves. And then what happens with bone marrow transplants is that all their bone marrow is irradiated from their body. They have no bone marrow left. They have no immune system. And then they get another person's bone marrow that helps them to recover from the illness. Usually, it used to be that they needed a recipient that was the perfect match for them, but they didn't always find a match. Now they can take the bone marrow out of the person, then edit the DNA of that person's bone marrow, and then put it back into them, and they can then cure their illness. First, it was invented. Now it was approved with sickle cell anemia. It's going to be approved in the coming years with all kinds of illnesses, things that we never imagined could have been cured in the past. There are cures now. So this person reached out to me and they said, do you remember that my prayer, you said to me to be careful between hope, having hope, and having expectations? And I said, well, my hope is for either a cure or for a total change in medicine. She was dreaming of like new dreams that we never could have imagined. And it's here. The future is actually here. So that's one tool that we have. And I think about this with Israel as well. Having hope for what will happen and having expectations. I don't know about you, but a lot of people told me, I don't know if any of you had this, a lot of people told me that after Hanukkah they got very depressed because people were hoping for a Hanukkah miracle in Israel, and it didn't happen. Truth is, it did happen. It did. There was a Hanukkah miracle that three hostages escaped, but unfortunately things didn't work out well because of the horrific situation in the battle there. So a lot of people have told me that they were feeling, and I felt it too after Hanukkah, especially with that story, I felt really depressed. But I realized, is it because we have like an expectation of a Hanukkah miracle, or is it our hopes? Because our hopes should never change. And Rabbi Sacks, I said this on Tisha B'Av, but I was thinking, it's been like Tisha B'Av every day, but what's been relevant for Tisha B'Av is relevant for us today. So I want to share with you something that I shared on Tisha B'Av this year, because I realized it is so relevant. Rabbi Sacks argues that, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, blessed memory, argued that we shouldn't distinguish between just hope versus expectation, which is, it helps a lot in the hospital because it helps us to avoid false hope. So we're careful about hope. I mean, we're careful about expectations, even though we always have hope. But Rabbi Sacks argued that we should distinguish between optimism and hope. Here's how he said it. Optimism versus hope. What does it mean? I'm going to actually read it to you because Rabbi Sacks can say it much better than I could ever say it. He said, optimism is the belief that things will get better. Hope is the faith that together we can make things better. Right? Optimism is hoping things can get better, but hope is making it get better. Optimism is a passive virtue. Hope is an active one. It takes no courage to be an optimist, but it takes a great deal of courage to have hope. Knowing what we do of our past, no Jew can be an optimist. But Jews have never, despite a history of sometimes awesome suffering, given up hope. Meaning, we can't really be optimistic that everything's going to be fine because we know that there's been so much tragic suffering, but we have always had hope. And our hope has accomplished incredible things. If you think about it, just the fact that there is a state of Israel, that's the result of hope, of people dreaming in ways that probably seems crazy to dream. After so much suffering and so much we've been through, to imagine that we would have our own state, that we'd be able to determine our own future, probably seemed crazy. And the truth is, I mentioned Hanukkah miracles. Rabbi Sacks, I know we've passed Hanukkah, but one of the things that he wrote that I always think about, even when it's not Hanukkah, was, you know, there's a classic question about Hanukkah, which is, why do we celebrate 8 nights of Hanukkah? It should be 7, right? Because the miracle was that the oil lasted 8 nights, but there was enough for one night. So the miracle was 7, not 8. What's the first miracle? What? Okay, winning the war. That's one answer that's often given, which is true. Yeah? Okay, very good. Celebrate the small miracles. Nisecha shebechol yom imanu. What? All right, finding the oil. Very good.
Wanting to light.
Wanting to light. Rabbi Sacks writes that the first miracle was that they even looked. That they even looked for oil at a time when they were experiencing such destruction. We were feeling totally defeated. It's the worst that we've experienced. Like, we were feeling so defeated. Like, nothing could be worse. Everything is destroyed. The Beis HaMikdash is in ruins. What could we possibly... it's just depressing, right? Like I was just mentioning, I think a lot of us feel... maybe not us, but myself and a lot of people feel a lot of depression lately. I mean, it's really hard times. And they were feeling it worse. They were right there on the front lines, and they saw the destruction. They saw the horrific things happening, and yet they still said, "Let's try to rebuild. Let's try to light the fire." Even though, like, what are the odds we're going to find anything? And then they did it, and then a miracle happened. Multiple miracles happened. So I think his insight is beautiful. It's what has brought the Jewish people throughout our history. I sometimes joke. I mentioned chaplaincy. I have a master's degree in Jewish history. So I sometimes joke that Jewish history is too depressing, so I went into chaplaincy. Because it might be depressing, but it's not as depressing as Jewish history. right? It's just this history of, but then again, it depends on how you look at it. It's a history of suffering and persecution and death, but it's also a history of Jewish people overcoming, persevering, resilience, building, making even better things, changing the entire world, in spite, or maybe because of what we went through, becoming the most incredible people ever in the planet. The most incredible survival story, but the most incredible accomplishments ever that we are such dreamers. And the truth is, if you think about it, and I'm not going to mention go through every holiday, but we could go through all of the holidays of the calendar and see how the theme of every holiday is having hope in difficult times. I'll give you another example. Rosh Hashanah. Anyone know what the mitzvah is to do the week before Rosh Hashanah? There's a mitzvah the week before Rosh Hashanah, in order to prepare for Yom Tov, is Slichos. Well, Slichos is part of it. Al Rachamecha Harabim Anu Betuchim, where we tell Hashem that we trust things are going to be okay. And then there's a mitzvah to get a haircut. There's actually a mitzvah to get a haircut. Why do we have a mitzvah to get a haircut right before Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Adin? So the rabbis say it's because we're supposed to have confidence that things are going to be okay. So we just act like as if we're preparing for everything to be fine. Rosh Hashanah is about having that confidence. The truth is, I heard a great idea from Rabbi Levi Meir of blessed memory. He was the rabbi at Cedar Sinai for 30 years. We were just talking about him. So I found his tapes in my office. I found 102 taped recordings of his, and I just put them up online. You can go on YU Torah and find they're beautiful from the 1990s. So I just listened to this week's Parsha, last week's Parsha, Vayigash. And he was saying from 1993, 30 years ago, he was saying, you know, when Yaakov meets Paro, he says something very strange, almost weird. Like when we read it, we're like, why was Yaakov so negative when he met Paro? Remember what he said? Any remember? Yes. Me'at v'ra'im hayushne yemei chayai. My life was short and difficult. Why is it so negative? Why was Yaakov so negative to Paro? So Rabbi Meir gave a beautiful answer. He said, if you look at the words he said, yemei shnei chayai. He didn't say my life. He said, yemei shnei chayai. My days were difficult. What does it mean, my days were difficult? What happened in Yaakov's life? Yaakov had a lot of struggles in his life, right? He woke up one morning to find out that his wife was switched. That was in the daytime. He is attacked by his brother. He tricks his father. That was all in the daytime. He had a lot of struggles with love on. He had a lot of challenges during the day. But what happened at night? He had dreams with angels. He had amazing encounters with angels, and he had dreams. So he said, my days were difficult. My days were difficult. But my nights, Rabbi Meir argued, he was saying, my nights is what got me through. Because at night, Yaakov dreamed. That was when he was dreaming. And because he was able to dream, he was able to persevere. He always had this sense of hope that somehow things will get better. So, and the truth is, and I'll wrap up in a second. I think we're almost out of time already. But because I'm going to tell you a story that I also told the story on Tisha B'Av, but it's a story that I think about almost every day because I think it's so important. But the truth is, this is relevant in so many areas of our life, but we in the hospital, we talk about this a lot. There is, did you know that in this week's Parsha, Yaakov, when it refers to Yaakov being a chole, it says that he sneezed. The Gemara says he sneezed. Anyone know what happened when he sneezed or why he sneezed? Well, it used to be that people would sneeze and die right away. So Yaakov prayed to get sick first. He was the first one to get sick before dying. His Avraham was the first one to age. This is another thing, by the way. I mentioned CRISPR as a side point. There's an FDA is also considering a medication now for dogs, some of you might have heard of this, to extend dogs' lives. They identified the gene that causes aging in dogs, and they realized that they can just change this gene, and dogs could live for decades longer. And the theory is, can you imagine? You have 80, 90-year-old dogs. And the theory is that next will be humans. people will be living to 150, 170, 180. And, you know, Abraham was the first one that prayed to age because he realized people didn't age before Abraham. And he realized that that was bad. We'll have to see. Is it going to be bad that we're not going to age anymore? Or okay, that's another conversation. Yaakov prayed to get sick before he died. That was his prayer. Why do you want to get sick? Because he realized people just die suddenly. They don't have a chance to, like, tell their families about what they want to have happen. People don't get a chance to talk when someone's sick. That, you know, there's a lot of things that happen when people are sick that they have an opportunity to talk about things and reconcile or share about what's hopeful, what's meaningful to them. So anyways, it says that when Yaakov, so he instituted sneezing and getting sick before you die. The Gemara says that there was a response you're supposed to say when someone sneezes. Anyone know what it is? A sutta. The Gemara says a sutta. The Mefarshim say that it became the custom became to say Lishuasecha Hashem Kivisi, Hashem, I hope for your salvation, and this became a theme. That's also the bracha in this week's parsha for Dan. Dan, the bracha was Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem, and because the midrash says Hakol Bekivui, everything depends on having hope. So much so that it does, we do even see that it can have an impact sometimes on patients, their attitude. In Mishlei it says, Ruach ish yechal kel machalehu, your attitude can sometimes have an impact on your emotions, on your physical health. There's actually a great book about this called Anatomy of Hope by Dr. Jerome Groopman, which is a great book. I remember Rabbi Meir also, speaking of him, he told me once a story about a psychologist at Cedars-Sinai who had a very bad diagnosis, but they didn't tell him. His family felt they shouldn't tell him yet because they weren't sure about things. But he said to them, I'm a psychologist. I can handle it. Other people can't, but I could. They said, no, let's just do more tests. We'll tell you soon, but let's see. Things are still hopeful. He said, no, I want to know, and I want to know everything. And Rabbi Meir said he was in the room when the doctor told him, but he didn't tell him carefully. The doctor said, okay, basically, you're going to die in the coming months. And Rabbi Meir even was like surprised. I can't believe he said it to him so bluntly. And then he said that that man died the next day. And he felt that it was because he completely lost hope. He just gave up. And he said, you know, you can't just be so blunt and so negative with people. And this, I think, also, just to start coming back to Israel, and I'll tell you the story that I think is so important. I think this is Israel. This is Yehuda Alevi. We mentioned the theme of today is Libi b'Mizrach, Vanochi b'Sof Ma'arav. My heart is in Israel, even though I'm on the ends, not just Spain, but we're the ends of the West, the furthest ends of the West. He did it. He ended up going to Israel. The story is that he died there, but you know that he wrote some of the best kinos that he wrote. And in one of the kinos, Sion, 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 Halot Tishali, right? That's the song. He wrote that he was a sire tikva. He was like held prisoner by hope. And he, in one place in that kina, he says, Miya seli kanafayim. If someone would just grow me wings, I would fly to Israel. People probably thought he was crazy. Fly to Israel? Who could ever fly to Israel? We could all fly to Israel right now if we wanted to. We could fly there today, right? But he had this sense of hope and this sense of vision that he could do much more than we ever imagined. So I want to share with you a story that is my favorite story, and I think about it, I promise, I think about the story every day. And I'm just going to tell a story, and you can just go if you want. But the story is that, it's a Yiddish story, but I only know it in English, sorry. The story was that there was a man who he died one day. He had no family. He was a peasant his whole life. And his body wasn't even found. He didn't have a burial spot. And when he died, it made a big noise in Shemayim. He came to heaven, and there was a beis din, a court case. He had a prosecuting attorney, his defense attorney, and Hashem. He got up there, and the prosecuting attorney said, Hashem, this is a man who never did anything good in his life. He never did a single mitzvah. The defense attorney got up and said, Hashem, this man, he lived in utter poverty. He lived in total poverty. How do you expect him to do anything good? He suffered his whole life, and he never cursed you. He never cursed God. So then the prosecution got back up and he said, you know what? God, if he never cursed you, I'm not going to say anything else. I'm going to rest my case and stop there. So then it's God's turn to give him his sentence. Is he going to get Gan Eden, heaven, or not? So Hashem says, look, it's hard. It's a hard court case because you don't have anything that I could reward you for. I don't have any mitzvahs. There's nothing I could reward you for. But the truth is, you were faithful. You never cursed me. You suffered a lot. So I'm going to give you one wish. You get one wish. That's what I could give you. And you could choose anything. So it's up to this guy, this peasant, to choose one thing. He could ask for anything. So he says, anything? And Hashem says, anything. So he says, okay, if I could ask for anything, could I please have a hot roll of bread? And he says, wait, Hashem, you said anything, right? He says, yeah, anything. Anything? He says, whatever you want. He said, could I have some butter on the bread? So the story goes, that concludes, the prosecuting attorney started laughing at him. The defense attorney lowered his head in shame, and Hashem started crying. Because he could have asked for anything. He could have asked for Mashiach. He could have dreamt big. He could have made up something. He could have asked for anything in the world. But he didn't know how to dream. He didn't know how to think outside the box. In his whole life, the only thing he'd ever hoped for was a nice meal, maybe a piece of bread. And maybe if he was lucky, some butter on the bread. That was the best he could ever hope for. And the message of the story is that we should dream big. Think outside of the box. Dream big. I know we're thinking right now, what's going to happen next in Israel? What's going to be next? And we're so worried. We should dream big because we're going to be amazed. We're going to be blown away by the incredible things that are going to happen. It, may Hashem comfort all of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and Medina Yisrael now. May our biggest hopes come true. May we dream big for an amazing future.